All right, so how on earth do we best talk about Throwback Thursday? You know, the things we do for you. So the best way to do that, of course, is to bring in world-renowned historian, lecturer, rabbi, and author Ken Spiro. A very, very good morning. Welcome to South Africa.
Thank you. Just got off the plane literally three hours ago.
I was just going to say, you can't have been here for long.
Literally not.
Right. Okay. So we will be a bit gentle on you. How was the flight? You got the chicken, the beef. It was all okay.
Absolutely.
All right. So there you have it. All right. So one of the conversations that, one of the subjects that I'm absolutely drawn to and fascinated by is narration and narrative. You know, Donald Trump talks about fake news. I think things are narrative news, actually. We pick a narrative and we stick to it. We can create, I can describe an event as absolutely positive and not lie, and you can describe it as completely negative and not lie either. As we move further away from history, of course, that becomes much more complicated. We know that history is written by the victors. That's how it's traditionally been. But we're also seeing more and more, and perhaps it's not more and more, maybe we're just being made more used to it, this whole fight over ownership of history, of rewriting history, of revisionist history. How do, as a historian, this must keep you awake at night?
Yeah, well, actually, the situation is a little out of control now. There's a great line I always use as a historian. Mm. Not even God can change history. Only historians can.
Oh, I love that. That's brilliant.
But the reality is today, everyone changes history, because back in the day when information came through very carefully monitored channels, whether it was news or textbooks, now because of social media, everyone's an expert, everyone's a historian, no one is really vetting or checking out what's going on, and the whole lexicon of how we explain things, you use the word narrative, is perfect. Mm-hmm. Like, I will have a discussion or a debate on a topic. For instance, the whole history of the Israel-Palestinian, and I will stick 100% to the facts, and at the end, the person I'm debating will basically not present any counterpoint so much as say, that's your narrative, I have a different one, and then focus on some experience narrative of some specific tragedy that happened to one person in
right,
the situation.
Very personal.
Mm. Right, and they extrapolate it. It's very emotionally manipulative. Mm. It's not factually based. It completely lacks context. But it has the ability to really tug on the emotions of people and elicit a response and a reaction. So it's very dangerous.
Well, it isn't it? I mean, of course it's very dangerous, but the reality is that the way in which we understand history, I think, in many, many ways, is to personalize it. So when we look back at the Holocaust, and in fact, I remember I went with my 13-year-old son, a whole bunch of fathers and sons. We went to Israel. It happened to be Yom HaZikaron, which is Israel's Day of Remembrance for the fallen. And instead of going to a massive tekes or parade, we went to visit a set of parents who had lost a child by the name of Alex Singer some years before. We sat in their living room, and they told the story of one loss of life. And that was much more powerful than it was trying to explain to our 13-year-olds about the thousands upon thousands of people who have lost their lives over the 70 years. So the reality is that history is brought to life by the personal incident. The problem is that it also blurs the context, doesn't it?
100%. And I could say, as a teacher and an author and a presenter, anecdotal information is extremely powerful. Mm. It takes what we know to be true, and unless we feel it, it doesn't become real for us. That's not a problem at all. The problem is when we take the anecdotal, the experiential, and we extrapolate from that the narrative, and the historical narrative on a broad scale, or distort it. We don't give the context to it. So right. A story of personal suffering can be very powerful in the context of an explanation about a historical event, but when you use that to distort the actual history and the background and the context is lost, then it becomes a rewriting of history, and actually it could be actually outright lies.
Well, we've seen a lot of that now. I mean, we've seen American politicians standing up and saying that they are comforted by the fact that her Palestinian brothers and sisters gave refuge to Holocaust survivors. And, you know, we've had a tremendous amount of that, a lot of that type of a narrative, and what went on particularly in Israel over the last 100 years or so has been rewritten. you know, how do we deal with that? And how do we deal with the fact that even some of our own narrative either leaves out very, very important, maybe ugly parts that we don't want to face? And then when we do face them, we think to ourselves, well, hold on, what else haven't I been told?
Yeah, well, Golda Meir had a wonderful quote. She said, we can never change the past to justify what we're doing in the present. And that the essence is just to be truthful, whether it's painful or not. Mm. Obviously, both sides in an argument can distort the facts. And the truth is not the – no one side has the monopoly on truth. But the important thing is to sort of reclaim the whole idea of that there is information that is objectively true regardless of – whether we want to hear about it or not, or whether it fits our narrative or not. And that seems to be what has been lost now, that you can actually, like I said before, you can actually make an excellent case based on facts, yet be totally disregarded because the other side is literally not using the same lexicon anymore, the same context, the same way of experiencing. That seems to have been lost. It's all about my point of view, how I state it. And it's also all about delegitimizing the other side. That is another huge issue where I'm told that my perspective is illegitimate because I'm a privileged white male or because I'm a Zionist occupier.
So we discount your view.
So therefore,
you even
I must
one.
Be lying. Exactly. And there's no arbiter of what's true or false anymore. It's just whoever can yell louder. And unfortunately, I've noticed in the case when I'm debating the other side, my father told me years ago, he said, you should never raise the strength of your voice, always the strength of your argument. But the technique used, I find often, is yelling and shutting you down, not even allowing you to make the case. You can't even open your mouth anymore.
Do you predict a time that this pendulum is going to swing back? Because we are moving and more in the direction of fake news, fake history, and revisionist history.
Yeah, I think it will because it's strikingly similar to what goes on in totalitarian regimes. And I spent time, and you mentioned it was Russian Language Day. Mm. I studied Russian language and literature.
Oh, there we go. That's another reason we had you into.
And I went this.
We knew that, didn't we, Zanati?
Definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll say a few words in Russian if you like, just to make
don't
it.
Don't worry.
I spent some time in the Soviet Union, as a graduate student, and it was amazing how they could literally write their narrative completely. And as a byproduct, now teaching many Jews from the former Soviet Union, they are the most critical people when it comes to this. They have zero tolerance for this fake news narrative
because they see
how it distorts truth and creates a reality that has nothing to do with the real reality, is used to justify a political or social agenda.
It's incredible. There's actually a new series on HBO called Chernobyl. I don't know if you've seen
it. I've been watching it. It's fantastic.
I actually watch it with my mouth open because I can't believe that we lived through this period and we had no real concept of what was really going on and the dangers that we were facing, that the world was facing actually. And it also does make me think and wonder what don't we, when do these things ultimately come out? When do we start hearing? I just read, Matti Friedman's book on the Mizrahi spies, during the time of the Israel's, independence. And these were a group of people who came from the Arab countries who were trained and went back and were pivotal in the creation of the State of Israel. And to think that I'm 50 years old and I'd never really, it's not as though I don't read on history. I enjoy it. I'm engaged on these subjects. But I had no idea. And it's quite frightening to know that whole chunks of stories are left out.
Yeah, well, by the way, you're talking about a very specific thing most people don't know. That's a relatively minor narrative in the history of Israel. As an educator, I could say I talk to thousands of people a year who know nothing about anything. Their phones know everything.
Right.
If I took away, I have this theory that I could actually, if I confiscated my students' phones, I could teach an entire class where nothing I said was true and no one would catch me on it. Because people just, again, it goes back to that kind of totalitarian thing. You're fed information, and what you're not fed, you don't know, and what you can't access on your phone, or don't ask your phone, you don't know either. So people are incredibly loud, belligerent, and strong on opinions and short on facts and information.
And generally, or very often, about emotion. I am chatting in a studio with Rabbi Ken Spiro. We're talking about reclaiming the ownership of history. Lots and lots of SMSs. I will try and get to some of them. Super on the spot. The history spot brought to life by radio. I've listened to Ken Spiro's broadcasts more than once. I've never got tired of it. That is from Gisela. Gisela, thank you. Other messages as well. Hi, can you please ask the rabbi the difference between what we call fake news and what we knew as a propaganda? I think that's a great question. Michelle says, also a big fan. I've enjoyed Rabbi Spiro's history series. I've never enjoyed history before. He makes it real. I recommend the series to everybody. So lots and lots of messages. Another is Benjamin saying, welcome to South Africa, Rabbi Spiro, from one of your big fans. I very much appreciate, enjoy your Jewish history talks. That is from Benjamin. It is 8:45. We'll be back with Ken Spiro in just a moment. Time is 8:48. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem, 101.9 Chai FM. Joining me in studio is Ken Spiro. Steve G says, hi, Howard. All I'm hearing is compliments about Rabbi Spiro, not one complaint or criticism. Can't believe it's really Jewish radio station. What have you done with all your regular listeners? Well, yeah, you should have heard them before. if you had heard them before, then certainly you would not be missing them. Mervin says, in Gemara Sanhedrin, it states that prior to the arrival of the Mashiach, truth won't be the rule of time, i.e. fake news. Mervin is one of our fundamentalists, listeners. He's quoting the Gemara around fake news. Going back to that earlier question, and I don't recall exactly who asked it, but the difference between fake news and what we know as propaganda.
It's actually a euphemistic term for more or less the same thing, because propaganda in the true sense of the word is basically giving over information or ideas that are designed to support or often distort or push a specific biased political agenda. And certainly the term, which is really, I don't know, Donald Trump didn't coin it, but he certainly popularized it, is the same idea of creating a narrative, a story, a fake story that's designed.
I have a problem with the term, because I often some things are fake news, but more often than not, it's narrative news, not right. Fake news. Because something might be absolutely true, but it only is telling half of the truth. It doesn't make it fake. It just creates a narrative.
Right. So fake is actually, I agree 100%. It could be that there's truth in it, but it lacks the context. Again,
correct.
It is about that narrative. It's taking one side of a story, pushing that to the exclusion of another without the context to create a certain impression about what the truth is or distort the actual truth.
One of the concerns that I have is being active on social media and fairly active in this space, I often feel that the amount of narrative or fake news is like a tsunami. And the constant responding to it and trying to point out facts and just becomes absolutely exhausting. And of course, we've got wonderful organizations like Simon Plotka's Honest Reporting. We've got a lot of organizations and groups that are helping in this area. But this does seem to be a lot more narrative news than there is truth.
100%. And by the way, the biggest problem with this now, it's like the boy who cried wolf. We're bombarded by so much of it that people do not, everything is assumed to be just biased. You see this, by the way, in America today, the politics are so, it's so divisive.
And lacks nuance.
Right. Like, it's people who watch CNN and they will never watch Fox News, and the people who watch Fox News and never watch CNN, because obviously everything that they're saying on CNN is going to be biased. Everything they're saying on Fox is going to be for their agenda. It's exactly the listener who talked about the Talmud, the Gemara in Sanhedrin. It's also the Mishnah in Sota. It says at the end of days, truth will be absent. And this whole insanity that the world is facing today, which we used to only expect to see from something like the Soviet Union, now is pervading the Western media to an extent where you really can't make a case for anything being absolutely true. And when you do, people just say that's your narrative, or that's your news, or that's your slant.
Right, it's totally dismissive. Then you don't even really get into any of the facts.
And by the way, it's extremely dangerous because it makes it impossible to quantify or qualify certain things like evil. You know, like the classic example, one man's freedom fighter is another man's terrorist is the one I hate the most.
We have that all the time here in South Africa, because when we take, and certainly when I take the South African government to task for welcoming Hamas to South Africa, a standard response is, well, Nelson Mandela was also called a terrorist. I mean, it's an absurd argument, because are they saying that no one's a terrorist then? Is ISIS really not a terrorist? So obviously it's a completely fallacious argument, but it's just powerful sounding.
Right. It's a way of, again, neutralizing the whole notion of good, bad, right, or wrong, or evil. I had this debate with the BBC years ago when I was doing work with them, and I complained that whenever they talk about an attack in Israel, it was militants. And I said to the bureau chief, why don't you call these people terrorists? And they said, we at the BBC like to maintain journalistic objectivity because one man's freedom fighter is another man's terrorist. And I said, you know what? Journalistic objectivity aside, when you target civilians, no one blows themselves up in a restaurant for recreational sport. When you target civilians, it's terrorism, regardless of your ideology. All terrorists are ideologically motivated. But when he's blowing you up, he's a militant. When he's blowing up an enemy of mine, he's a freedom fighter. When he's blowing me up, then he's a terrorist. So the same BBC that would not call any attacks in Israel terrorist, even when women and children are being blown up in a pizzeria, when they had the attack on the London mass transit, in 2000, when was that? I forgot even the year that was in.
Seven, I think.
Whenever that happened, the mass attack on the London mass transportation system, every other word out of the BBC's reporter's mouth was terrorist, terrorism, terrorist.
Interesting. So suddenly they lost that objectivity. I always think that when we look back at a period like World War II, that good and evil was easier to define. We had this axis of evil. We have the Allies. You know, it was very, very clear. But then I came across every day on the show at round about 10 to 7, we have a little segment called On This Day in History. And, I do some research and I find all the interesting things that have happened on this day in history. We do it internationally and locally. And, in fact, it was either yesterday or a couple of days ago that, it spoke about, I think it was in 1923 when Mussolini in Italy, awarded women the right to vote. And I thought that was so fascinating because he was part of this axis of evil. And we've always considered, you know, it was so clear. I've always thought, well, back then it was simple because you knew who was good and you knew who was bad. You knew the Supermans from the Batmans from the Jokers. It was very, very clear. But then I looked at that and I thought, well, maybe it wasn't so clear because maybe somebody like Mussolini actually did do a couple of things that might have confused people who were trying to decide which side of history he needed to stand on.
Well, they say he did make the trains run on time.
Oh, there we go.
But again, here's another classic case that people don't realize if you know your history, that pre-World War II, there was a tremendous amount of interest and support worldwide, England, America, for progressive political ideologies such as fascism and Nazism. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm reading a book now about Hitler's American allies. There were huge Nazi rallies. People like Lindbergh, the aviation hero, was a huge supporter. Mm. So it wasn't so clear-cut. These were ideologies that were viewed as the future. That's, you know, progressive politics. This is government making the world a better place. Once, you know, we found out who Hitler was really was and what he did, then that was kind of pushed under the carpet. So the point is, again, it's much more subtle and nuanced than that. But you're right. Years ago, back in the day, good was good, bad was bad. It was very unambiguous. Today, you just can't say that anymore. Everything is gray, and that's a very dangerous situation for the world
scary.
On the deepest level. Absolutely.
I've been chatting to Rabbi Ken Aspiro. He is in South Africa. He's brought out by The Base and by Aisha Torah. He will be speaking this evening at The Base at 7:45. That is number 32 Sunny Road. If you do want to go along to The Base, and I believe that is something absolutely worthwhile. If you weren't privileged enough, as I was certainly during Sinai and Darba, to hear Ken Aspiro speak, then don't miss out. It is absolutely worthwhile. He will also be at The Base over Shavuot. You can get details around that. It is 8:57. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem, 101.9 Chai FM. We really don't have a lot of time. I did want to tell you about an article in the Times of Israel. It's time for a Torah emoji, and this organization is working to make it happen. So, Nati, remember we were talking talking about, how do they quote it, a group of Jewish rabbis as opposed to other rabbis. Remember that that story? We're looking to create an emoji with a yarmulke on.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, anyway, so now they've come up with another one and they want an emoji Torah. But apparently it's not as simple as you might think, because is the Torah going to be open? Is it closed? Is it is it somebody holding it? And if somebody is holding it, is it male hands? Is it female hands? It's quite incredible, the complexity of the world that we have created for ourselves. So when I looked at this, I rolled my eyes and I thought, my word, I don't think we even deserve much of or what we have. It's just completely, completely absurd. Right, tomorrow's another busy day. We've got a lot going on. Mm. Zanati, I'm trying to decide if we've got time for any last traffic, but we don't.
No.
I think you can just accept that, what, all traffic lights in Sandton are out.
All traffic lights are not working.
That's
exactly.
It. Yeah, and if you find one, good luck, hey, because that's the rarest thing. That is the rarest thing that you might, that you can possibly find. It's been great. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem. This has been your Morning Mayhem. 101.9 Chai FM. We're going to catch up on some of our ads, followed by the news at 9 o'clock.